you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Hello and welcome to a special post finale edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm well-known rapper, David Bloomberg, and I'm going to do my best to not swear in the opening moments of this podcast.
No, please do it.
No. Joining me as always, who you've already heard, is my co-host, Jessica Lewis.
Yes, hello. I hope you all remember who we are since it's been so long.
Yes,
my goodness, I apologize.
Been weeks.
It really has been. And, I've missed you, David. I've missed you.
Aw, I've missed you too.
Well, you know.
Especially when you say, David, you're right. You know, that's...
That's true. That is true. Although you did not respond to my direct tweet at you regarding the selfies. I don't know what happened there.
I have been very inactive on Twitter over the past
few
weeks.
I noticed.
Yes, I have been virtually absent from Twitter. And I'll have to get back in there. But what I have found is that when I'm on Twitter, I'm fully on Twitter.
Yes, that's true.
When I'm off Twitter, I am fully off Twitter. And there's no need. I have to get back on right now.
You just need to find a happy medium. A happy medium.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there is a happy medium with Twitter, you know. The thing is, this past few weeks has been very busy for both of us. Mm-hmm. I know, we had said in our finale podcast that we had intended to get this one out probably last week, but since the finale, I've been on a vacation to Mexico, moved my older son to another state to start a new job, had a leak in my new basement windows that were installed specifically to prevent that leak.
Oh no.
Traveled to Chicago multiple weekends for family events. And had a very busy situation at my, other job. And I think you've had a similar calendar as well.
Oh, my word. This whole month thus far has just been nonstop. Work has been very extreme. We also had an issue in our basement with a leak that had to get fixed. So we've been digging holes and recreating dry wells in our backyard. So that's been real exciting out there with shovels and... Gotta love my husband for being a Superman because I don't know how he did it. But yeah, so things have been just a tad crazy.
You should have told your kids that there was a, it was part of a challenge. They had to dig a hole to retrieve puzzle pieces.
Well, let me tell you, we did get them out there and they were digging. It was quite impressive. They were moving rocks. But what I thought was amusing about it is every once in a while, like what if I took a wheelbarrow of dirt away, then my husband would stop digging or, because obviously there's nothing to put the dirt into. But then my son would also stop working, even though he was moving rocks. So he would just stop and he would start chatting with Aaron until I came back. It was quite cute because it was like every time I left, he was like, all right, it's time to talk.
Break time. Union mandated break time.
Exactly. So but they were both out there helping and it was really great to see. So but yeah, things have just been crazy. Crazy, crazy. So hopefully we can get through this and we'll do okay. I think we will.
Yeah, yeah. And, we were thinking about recording last night, but we had a little bit of trouble recording last night. So here we are.
Do you want me to tell them why?
Sure.
I had a headache and I told Bloomberg no.
And I said, it's the first time I've ever been told not tonight. I have a headache for a podcast,
It was amazingly funny. So thank you for that. That was quite entertaining.
So in any case, with season 36 behind us, obviously we're not talking about our normal topics of why anyone lost or won, but rather, we'll be taking a look back at the season and answering some questions that some listeners have posed over the past few weeks. Last season, some of you may remember, we did more of a deep look at who did well in each rule and rank the players and everything. But I really feel like we've covered a lot of that already, especially in our finale podcast. Mm. So, and, you know, we had some pretty long podcasts at, near the end of the season there.
Yeah,
so
we did.
I feel like we would just be retreading that same ground, and I don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm, I agree. And I'm going noteless tonight, so let's do this.
No yellow notepads have been harmed in the making of this podcast.
Exactly. I've saved some trees. Yes.
All right. Well, then we're going to start out with a question that I'm going to ask of you. So we'll see how noteless goes.
This could be scary.
Yeah. So for the first question, which comes from Nancy Greenshields, she says, great wrap-up show as usual. So thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
She says she has a question which isn't really under the purview of the rules, but she would like to hear what we think. Since Dominic and Wendell found their idols relatively early in the game, her question is, did great players utilize idols in great ways, or did having the idols early on enable them to become great players?
That's a really fabulous question. And I have to go back to what Dominic discussed in his very long deep dive with Rob when he talked about his use of the idols, where he thought it turned out, and I don't even know if this was necessarily what he was attempting to do, but by letting people know, by kind of leaking it to the group that he might have an idol that could be fake, could be real, that it did almost instill a type of fear into people in regards to voting him off because they thought he might have an idol. So I thought that was interesting because I do think that that is kind of a side effect of having an idol, is that it gives you something that other players don't have. And this is kind of like an aura of what could happen. If you think somebody has an idol, do you risk it? Do you take the chance? Because really what you're doing, if you write that person's name down and they have an idol, you're running the risk of, what if they put my name down and then I go home because they play their idol? So I do think that it has an effect of kind of making a great player. But I also think that, especially in this season with Dominic and Wendell, they were great players because they had a plan going into it. They were already thinking about how to use idols the right way. They were looking for idols immediately. They were finding idols immediately. So I think it's a combination. It's, you have to be a great player in order to understand the power of an idol. But then you also can utilize the effect of having that idol to further yourself in the game. So I think it's a combination. I think, so, I mean, we've seen plenty of people in years past that have flopped, you know, found an idol, misplayed it. So it doesn't necessarily make you a great player if you don't understand everything that comes with possessing an idol.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I do think that having an idol early allows a person to play in a different way, maybe with more confidence.
Mm.
And, you know, it would be easy to say that Wendell never even needed to use his idol. But like you said, word was out. They leaked the information that he and Dominic had idols. And, you know, agreeing with you that I definitely think that affected the way other people thought about them and hindered the people who were thinking about going after the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree that both Wendell and Dominic are great Survivor players. And getting idols was a part of that. Knowing what to do with them was an even bigger part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But with that said, if they had gotten idols and been in the minority like the Malolos were, I don't think that having those idols would have been able to drastically change their positions. I think that it was a combination, you know, and everyone likes to say that there is luck involved, and certainly there is, even though we, you know, try to avoid the discussion of luck because, you know, in some ways in Survivor, you often make your own luck. You know, if you draw a rock out of a bag, not so much, but
gotta throw that in
know,
there.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't make a rock pun when I introduced you, so it's gotta be there somewhere.
That's true.
But, you know, would they have been as great if they were in the Malolo situation, even with idols? And it's hard to say yes, just because so many of the Malolos would have been good players, I think, if they hadn't been in that just horrible situation.
It's almost like the perfect storm. There needs to be so many things that come together that allow you to use an idol to its full potential. And we saw it this season. They both had idols and were able to use them to their full potential, so much so that Wendell was able to give his away at the end, you know, to Laurel. He didn't even need it, for God's sakes. So, but if they were in a different place at the beginning of the game and they were losing and they were likely to go to tribal council, yeah, everything's going to change. So I think in this particular season, it just worked out exceptionally well for them. And it really was a perfect combination of things that came together. And they played it so exceptionally well.
Yep, I agree. All right, moving on to question two. Jessica, I think you have this one.
Okay, this is from Justin Feinberg. Now that we have heard more about Chelsea's game, especially from Dominic, has your opinion on her game and her sense of the game altered at all?
Who?
You're terrible. You're horrible.
I'm horrible.
You are.
My answer, honestly, is not really. And, you know, I mean, part of it is that, yeah, I know Dominic mentioned her in his deep dive interview, but from what I remember, and maybe she just doesn't even stick in my memory in an interview, you know, what we heard from Dominic was that, yeah, she was doing some strategizing with him, but I don't recall him saying anything that amounted to something beyond her being mad at him when he stabbed her in the back, because he had promised to work with her, you know, had promised, you know, the final three, and then he stabbed her in the back. So she was mad at him. I still think she was viewing the game just from a completely different worldview, which goes back to explaining why she was so invisible, because her, you know, her confessionals, I think, just didn't line up with the way the game was playing out. And so, I mean, so no, I really don't have much to base it on to say, oh, she was a completely different person. I mean, okay, we know that she did some strategizing, but other than that, no, I just don't have much more to add. Do you?
Well, I know that Dominic did talk about how when he heard that Chelsea was involved in the Dez issue, that when Dez was suddenly wanting to vote out Kellen, I think that there was some problems there for Dominic, because he couldn't believe Chelsea would have been involved in that, because he and Chelsea were close. He did seem to make it sound like he had a close relationship with Chelsea, but it clearly wasn't. But you know what? I can't even say that, because now I'm thinking about the relationship I had with Adam in my season, and he and I were extremely close and you didn't see any of it. So I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. I think that perhaps what Chelsea was struggling with is that she was playing the game with people, and she was playing the game that they were playing with them, if that makes sense. Like, she wasn't leading the charge. She wasn't necessarily making things happen, but she was going along with what was happening and she was involved, but not like a Dominic or a Wendell, who was kind of manipulating things and making people make determinations and decisions about the game itself, as opposed to, okay, yep, yeah, no, we can do that. Nope, that's a good idea. I'll do that with you. So I don't know. I mean, it's a tough call, because we still don't have very much. We really don't.
Right. Right. And I think I agree with you. Yes, she had a relationship with Dominic, but does that mean that she was, like you said, she was participating,
mm-hmm.
but was she leading the charge? And I would say everything we've seen indicates no. And, you know, it is interesting, the point you brought up about, you know, when basically Dez killed Chelsea's game
mm-hmm.
by mentioning her name the way she did. You know, Dominic said after that point, he could never fully trust her.
Yeah.
And, you know, that also threw Kellen into disarray, because Kellen had just been with Chelsea and saw no signs that she was lying, because she wasn't, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was something we had talked about at the time, you know, that I had surmised that here was the situation, that Chelsea wasn't involved, despite what Desiree said.
Yeah.
And which also goes back to our whole discussion, you know, and I know there's a few people who want us to stop saying no cookies, but but it goes back to that where the numbers don't add up because she never had Chelsea.
Right.
And so anyway, we're going a little bit off on a tangent here, but in the long run or, you know, overall, no, it doesn't really change much about my opinion of Chelsea. So.
He's harsh.
Well, it didn't really change yours either. You just didn't sum it up that way.
Well, no, so. Listen, she seems like a very sweet girl. And I've said that before. I do think she seems like a sweet girl. And I just feel like she was playing a game with people that were playing a stronger game than she was. And so, unfortunately, the focus is not going to be on her because she's playing the game with them. Not leading them.
Yeah. All right. The next question is from Asher Streets. Should Tide finalists get to make a pitch to the new last juror, or should that last juror get time to ask questions of the two Tide finalists?
Oh, geez. You know, it's so frustrating because obviously we've only seen this happen once, and I cannot imagine what was going through Laurel's head at that moment. I mean, that has to be crushing for so many reasons. And she talked about it at length, you know, that she basically just got pummeled by everyone who was on the jury. And then she finds out that not only did she lose, she got zero votes. And now she has to make this huge decision about who do you end up giving $1 million to. So I cannot fathom how difficult that all must have been for her, because that has to be impossible to really make a clear decision at that point. But she did make a decision based on the relationship she had made. And I don't know if it would be, what would she ask them? You know, I mean, she just sat there and listened to all of the reasons why they expressed why they should win and how they played the game and what they did better than the other people sitting next to them. I don't know if she would have been able to ask another question that would have made a difference to her. So I really don't know if it would make a difference if at that moment she would ask a question, because I can't imagine she would have a good thing to say at that point with everything that's happening in her brain, or anyone at that point. I can't imagine that they would have a coherent thought that they would say, you know, I really need to address this. But here's the other thing too. I'm sure that if Laurel had said, Jeff, can I just say something right now? I want to ask them a question. I think Jeff would have let her. I really think he would have. So
I think so too.
It's one of those things that if that's what the person wants to do, I don't think there's anything stopping it. So if I were sitting there and there was something really bothering me and I have to cast this vote for someone who's going to win $1 million, maybe I want to ask him a question. He would absolutely allow it.
Yeah. And I, you know, I do think it's a very interesting question because, well, okay, you said they have just been the tiebreaker, had just been there through the whole final tribal council. So they heard everything. But thinking from their perspective, they were trying to win the game themselves at that point. So they probably weren't thinking about things in terms of who was the best one to pick, because they didn't think they were going to have to pick one. They were trying to get people to pick them.
Right.
And it's not just if they want to ask a question. What if Dominic wanted to say to her, look, I know you're probably thinking of picking Wendell, but think of my children, you know, or about the times that we spent this. I don't know that it should have been just left up to her, but what if one of the two finalists wanted to say one last thing?
I think Jeff would let that happen too. And this is the thing that people need to realize. If you're going to play Survivor, and obviously I went out there as a first time player you don't really understand what you can and can't do. You kind of do, you kind of don't. And there are certain expectations you have, like things that you think you can do, but nobody really tells you can't. Survivor is one of those games that you gotta just do it. If you feel like I still kick myself for certain things that I didn't do because I thought to myself, well, I shouldn't do that. I can't do that right now. For example, getting up in Final Tribal and talking to people who are far away from you. I wanted to talk to Will so badly at that tribal council where we went to Rocks, but he was on the other end and I was way over here, and trying to talk to him was almost impossible. I should have just stood up and walked over there and talked to him, but nobody had done that. And it wasn't until we saw in the next season in Game Changers that suddenly JT is getting up and he's having conversations with people on the other side of tribal council whispering. And guess what? Completely allowed. And now it happens all the time. So I really feel like this is one of those situations where if Dominic or Wendell, even though I know this is new and this is something that people are figuring out, but if this is for $1 million and if you want to say something to her, my God, you just have to do it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it is interesting. I hadn't thought about that with your tribal council. I know we're going off on a tangent again here, but
sorry.
No, it's good. If your season happens a couple later, you probably do get up and go talk to Will. Will realizes you're not flipping, so Will flips, so we never get Rock Draw.
Right. Totally different game. But until you see it happen in Survivor, sometimes you don't know what the expectations are, what you will be allowed to do. Now, Game Changers clearly are returning players, so they're playing a different kind of game. And it's one of those things that you just have to kind of take a risk and go for it, because you don't know. And I don't think that in that moment, if Dominic had said, listen, Laurel, I need to talk to you about this before you make this decision, Jeff would have let him do it. And then Wendell would have piped in there too, I'm sure. And it would have been potentially a different ending, but maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think in this case that it would have changed anything. I'm just speaking more hypothetically for the future, I think.
Yeah, no, and I get it, because she was clearly, she had a very close relationship with Wendell.
Yeah. So, all right, moving on to the next question.
All right. So, John Johnston. That is the coolest name ever. I love this name. John Johnston asks, will you do a Y-blank-1 on New Zealand and Africa when their seasons end?
All right. Well, John, I hate to, disappoint people. Because I don't have a solid answer to that yet. And I had been planning to start on New Zealand Survivor as soon as season 36 ended, and then South African Survivor as soon as possible afterwards. And so far, none of that has happened. So, we can't make any promises here. I'd like to think that we'll be able to catch up by the end. And if that happens, and, you know, it seems worthwhile, we will do our best to do that. But right now, it's just going to have to remain a question mark, because I don't even know how many episodes behind we are. And, you know, it's not super easy to watch New Zealand and South African Survivor. I can't just pull it up on my television set. So we're going to try, but we make no promises. Do I speak for you there too, Jessica?
You absolutely speak for me there too. Yeah. Yeah, I make no promises.
Okay. All right. So, that was a shorter answer. So we'll move on to the fifth question here. I guess I should mention that these were the top 10 questions submitted to us. I should mention that part. So that's how many you're looking at here. So this is from Terry Porter. Who used others' emotions most effectively to manipulate their games?
Ooh, honestly, I really think Wendell did. And I think that he did so because he was able to really hone in on what was important to people. And Sebastian is a perfect example. That whole thing with the shell still blows my mind. And I remember watching it when it happened on the screen, when he brought the shell back to Sebastian. And Sebastian was so taken aback by that one gesture. And I thought, that's incredible, because that's someone who clearly pays attention to what's important to someone else. And then that's what he's expressing to them. And he's making them realize that they're significant and important to him. But he did that with each person that he had a relationship with. He recognized things about people, like even when he talked about Chris Noble. And how, you know, when Chris Noble was at the beginning was rapping, and Wendell knew that that was an important component to Chris Noble. And so he was building him up. He was making Chris Noble rap because it was drawing attention to Chris Noble, and it was taking attention away from other people. And it ended up annoying people by the end because he was rapping all the time because he had been so built up at the beginning about his rapping. But that, I think, is really quite impressive that Wendell was able to do that with each person individually that he formed a bond with. Laurel is another one. When he saw that she was down and out in certain moments and he wasn't getting a good read on her, he would talk to her and he would tell her a little bit about himself so he could gain some more trust with her. So I think he really did a phenomenal job of utilizing people's emotional response to various components and various parts of themselves to further his own game.
Yeah, I agree, though I have some different reasons. He said in his deep dive interview that everything he did socially was because it's just the kind of person he is. But I think that being that kind of person tended to make people like him more. So whether it was his intent or not, I think he manipulated people's emotions positively toward himself, like you said. But we also know he intentionally manipulated Kellen and Laurel in a way that ensured they would never work together at the end. You know, by telling Kellen to vote Laurel and Laurel to vote Kellen at the split tribal council, both of them ended up completely distrustful of the other. And that helped clear his path to the end there. And so if we're looking at who manipulated other people's emotions most effectively, I think he definitely did it.
Yeah, that is a great point. He certainly had, and we didn't even really see it, which makes it so sad. We saw the after effect, but we didn't really see all of the lead up to it. But clearly it worked.
We're sitting here, you know, everybody's arguing, why isn't Laurel getting together with Kellen? Why isn't Kellen getting together with Laurel? You know, and I know that, you know, there were people who were very upset. Sure, they voted for each other, but they had to. Oh, it's not just because they voted against each other. It's because of the way that it happened and everything that led up to it at that moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, what Wendell told each of them. And so, yeah, that definitely, you know, just I wish we could have seen that. And
I wish
some
we
of
could
the other
have, too.
Things too.
It's frustrating because doing this, obviously, and we've talked about this before, we can only judge a person's game by what we see. And clearly, with the edit, you don't see everything. You see some things that are significant to the story that they want to tell and other things that you never hear about. And so you're left kind of scratching your head about why people do certain things. So this is one of those things that we didn't learn until now. You know, I don't think anyone even really talked about it very much in their exit interviews. I mean, I think the deep dive interviews is where this really all came out.
Yeah, Kellen's deep dive. So we were able to talk about it in our finale episode because of the timing of when Kellen's deep dive interview happened. So I was glad for that we were able to explain, oh, okay, this is what happened here.
Right. But at the time, you're kind of going, what the hell happened?
Right.
So that's good that we're able to revisit these things and look at them in a different light. And this is one of those things. It was a great move.
Yep. All right. Next question you have, I think.
All right. This is from Susie Ann. If the fire-making twist at the final four is here to stay, which rules could change or become more or less important?
Well, it does appear that the fire-making twist is here to stay.
Damn it.
And yes, yeah, both of us have shared our opinions / rants.
Yes.
Both this season and last season. But as to the question, I'm not sure any rules would change in importance or wording because of this. I think instead it's the way players need to negotiate the game and their use of the rules. And so, for example, when they are strategizing, they may have to take into account challenge and fire-making skills of their allies more than ever. I mean, before, who cared if your ally was good at fire making? Great. He or she will be able to keep the fire going at night when you make it to the end. Well, now you got to think about it. Ah, crap. Do I want that person, you know, possibly facing me in fire making at the end?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they but beyond that, I think, and I think this is something we've talked about, I think Rob has talked about it, they have to make moves against big threats earlier so as to ensure they can't win themselves to the end like Ben and Wendell did. Now, not that anyone could have really stopped either of them at a Final Five or anything, but in a theoretical situation where someone could, you know, it's been discussed, and mostly we discussed this last season 35 when the fire making first came up, but you know, that Jeff Probst probably instituted this fire making twist to ensure that strong players wouldn't be voted out at Final Four, much like the Final Three was instituted so that strong players wouldn't be voted out before they got to the Final Two. Okay. But all we're doing is pushing it one back. Mm-hmm. So instead of voting them out at Final Four, a good player now, by now, you know, they've already recorded one season. They're in the middle of recording another season. By now, players should know, fine, don't wait to Final Four to vote them out. Vote them out at Final Five. And yeah. So I think that all this twist will do is simply push back the time frame for voting out threats.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what it should do if, you know, people are paying attention. So does it change the rule? No. Does it change how people should work within the rules? Yeah.
I also think it's going to stop people from making a goddamn fire when they're out there. You know? I mean, like, honestly, David was fantastic at making fire, David Wright. I mean, he was like Pigpen. He was so filthy dirty. He was covered in ash because he like lived in the fire. That was what he did. He was the fire guy. And if this little twist had been in my season, everyone would have been fearful to let David be in that Final Four, because guess who's winning the fire making challenge? David, you know, so I feel like people are just not gonna, they're just gonna be like, I'm not making a fire. You can all freeze. We'll be cold. We won't eat anything. Like, it's gonna have like a negative effect on how people play the game.
Yeah. I wonder if in some hypothetical season where David might hypothetically return, if anyone, you know, would consider that about him. But, you know, that's better left to the hypothetical realm there.
Yes, hypothetically, if David makes it to the Final Four. Yeah.
Yes. So that part is totally hypothetical, by the way. We're not
completely hypothetical.
Yes. Yeah, all right. This next one is from a guy. Maybe you have heard of him. His name is Rob Sesternino, and he asked, will you be doing Why Blank Lost for Survivor Loved Ones? Now, I guess the first question is, did you listen, Jessica, to the Survivor Loved Ones podcast?
I have to be honest here and say I did not. I am planning on listening.
So.
Yes, and let me tell you, all of the deep dive interviews except Wendell's were like 3 hours long. So
yes,
that was a lot to take in and process. However, I did look at who was on Survivor Loved Ones, and there seems to be some very strong contenders there. And I think that it's going to be a very enjoyable listen. Aunt Patty, I don't know, she's one of my faves, but Val's in there too. So, you know, there's some good ones in there. But I will definitely be listening. You probably listened. I'm assuming that you did listen.
I don't want to spoil anything for those who haven't listened yet, because I mean, even though it's been a little while, no spoilers here. But I do have to say, I think the final jury votes were ridiculous, and I just don't understand what those jurors were thinking. So I would have to do a deep dive into the season. But my guess is that the second place finisher just didn't do enough to show how they were truly running the game, because that's a problem we've seen a lot of recently.
Wow, I like it.
Yeah, we probably won't do a whole podcast for it, but, you know, that's my thoughts right now.
I'm definitely going to be listening. I promise you that. I had to get through all of these deep dive interviews first. So that'll be my extra.
All right. Next question.
All right. So this is from Jennifer Ryder. Are you considering any rule changes based on this season's activity?
Well, not. I guess it depends on what you mean by rule changes. Not so much like wholesale changes, like when I elevated the appendix to a rule, downgraded a rule to an appendix, but definitely some alterations to the wording. One of them is actually what I was just talking about, because a small part of the second rule is a warning that we've seen a few instances of keeping scheming too secret, such that the jury doesn't know someone was really playing or directing the game. For a long, long time, the example I had of this was JT taking all the credit for strategy, even though Steven was pretty much an equal partner. I mean, how many seasons ago was that? You know, that was a while ago. Mm-hmm. And that was my example there. At the time, at least one of the jurors had told me in an interview that they simply didn't give Steven enough credit for the scheming and plotting he did, which they only later saw on television. But now, fast forward a number of seasons, and it has been happening a lot more lately. First, there was Korong, when Michelle won, and many viewers were all upset about it. And, you know, several of the jurors said that while we saw Aubrey's game on TV, they didn't see it out there. And, you know, Aubrey apparently spoke at length in the final tribal council about what she did and how she played, but much of the jury simply didn't believe her because they didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
And then now jump again to the last two seasons, and it happened not once, not even twice, but three times. Ryan first suffered the fate of nobody believing that he had done anything strategic to get to the final three. Then Laurel had a very similar situation with people believing she was dragged there, even though she was a partner in the decision-making. You know, we've heard that in all the interviews now, but the people on the jury didn't see that. They saw her being protected rather than also as being a protector. And when she tried to explain it at Final Tribal Council, nobody was willing to listen, much like what happened to Aubrey. But I said it happened three times. And the third one is Dominic. And, you know, I think I mentioned this in our last podcast, but I can't remember now for sure, because I know it sounds weird, but he might have been the face of the alliance to some players. He wasn't thought of being behind the strategy by others because he talked directly to some players while Wendell dealt specifically with other players. And many of those who were handled by Wendell thought that Wendell was not only the face to them, but the brains. And it wasn't until they watched it on TV that they realized how much those two guys were truly partners. So clearly that's something that, you know, needs to have more emphasis just because of the number of times it has happened recently.
Yeah, this goes back to my suggestion that perhaps, and I know CBS probably would never want to do this, but the idea of actually letting the jurors see parts of the game while they're at Ponderosa, as opposed to just seeing tribal council. Because when you're sitting there listening to people talk about what's been happening, there's a lot of things that aren't filled in. A lot of times you don't hear about the challenge and how somebody actually won the challenge and what happened. And I don't know if it would be helpful. I think it would be helpful personally if I was able to see just certain components, things that were happening, because you have a better understanding of how that person's game is playing out when you're not there anymore. It's one thing when you're in the game playing with them and you're seeing what's happening. It's a completely different thing once you're out of the game. And I think that even you look at the split vote on this season, where the first five vote for Dominic and the last five vote for Wendell, clearly the first five saw something that maybe the last five didn't, and vice versa. And so I don't know if that would ever be a consideration that they would make. And I don't know if they've even thought about it. I'm sure they have. CBS seems to think about everything. But it would be interesting to see how that would change people's perception, because we do hear it a lot that I didn't know you did this until I watched the actual season, until I saw it on TV.
Yeah, I would not be in favor of showing more because I saw it have negative effects in early Big Brother.
Mm.
But I think it's just incumbent on the players to make sure every, you know, who knows what. you know, that you can't just, yes, you have to keep your scheming secret, but not that secret, you right. know, that.
But I think it's a difficult thing to do.
Oh, it is. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, you run the risk of, I mean, if we talk about Ryan, and you mentioned Ryan, he's a great example because he was the reason why the relationship between he and Chrissy was formulated. And they took that relationship and ran with it. And it worked out exceptionally well for both of them. But he was how that all started. And what are you supposed to do when you do that? You know, you don't want to tell people that you've got this secret bond created with this person, so they don't know about it. But she's just a more vocal person. She's winning more challenges, so she's someone that you're noticing more. But that doesn't mean that Ryan isn't doing anything. So I don't know how you combat that without becoming overly aggressive and potentially hurting your game, because now you're drawing a target on yourself because you're saying basically, look at me, see everything I'm doing. You better vote me out, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it is a difficult balance. I think Laurel tried to counteract it, tried to take credit for things in the tribal councils leading up to final tribal council. I just think it was too late by then. Nobody believed her. Or even if they did believe her, they still thought the others, you know, one of the others did better. I think that's one way to do it, is talk about things, you know, in a situation like that. But yeah, it's a risk, but it's always a risk. You know, there's always that balance. Anyway, that's not the only rule alteration that I see coming. Earlier in the second rule, there's wording that discusses how players shouldn't tell targets when their time is up. And the rule says that as much as some players say they want to know ahead of time, and, you know, some people might feel like it's a good idea to let the targets know in case they make it, in case they're on the jury and, you know, the player who's doing the telling makes it to the end and has to face that previous target at the jury. I still say it's better to risk it and at least get to that, to the final three, rather than giving your target an opportunity to turn the tables. So that's what the rule says now. And I just want to add to that, it's especially important now because there are so damn many idols and advantages floating around. If you just want to be a nice person and tell someone they're the target, they will know they need to play their idol if they have one. And poof, there goes your blind side. I mean, imagine what would have happened if someone had told Chris that they'd all agreed to turn on him. That would have been horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It would have ruined a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, yeah, you know, I'm you know, just emphasizing that. Now, before anyone writes in, I will say, yeah, there is one counter argument to that. Because Wendell told Kellen when she was leaving, and she said in her interview that that helped her feel like he was, you know, he had truly made a personal connection to her. I still say that was an unnecessary risk. Though, you know, I mean, in his case, he probably figured he had accounted for all the idols in play at that point. But still, in general, unless you know where every single idol is, just don't do it. Because you're just risking too much by doing so.
Mm-hmm.
So, then there's one more. Finally, I think that I will add something to Rule 7, speaking of idols, to discuss making and use of fake idols. And I'm not exactly sure what it'll say yet, but there has been enough of the fake idol you know, creation and use going on that I do think something should be included there, because it's grown into its own strategy now.
Yeah.
And there were so many fake idols floating around this past season that they didn't even show us some of them.
I still want to see the one Wendell made. Who has
one,
it?
I think he made two, three, half dozen.
Right. But the one with the skull and crossbones, like, where is that thing? I want to see it. Jenna, if you have it, whoever has it, I would like to see it. Take a picture, post it, something.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
know. I'm curious.
So
I have a follow-up on this, too, because I don't know if this would be something that you would or would not want to add into Rule 7. But the fire making challenge, could that be considered an advantage? If you're the one that is now having to make this determination about who are you going to send to make the fire?
Well, it hasn't been an advantage to either of them yet.
Well, it hasn't been. And that's why I feel like it's a weird thing. Like, I don't know how you would actually describe it, but it is something.
I would say that falls into kind of what we were discussing in the one of the previous questions of, yeah, I think you just need to use your strategy at that point. You need to scheme and plot. And that may mean throwing that challenge, you know, like Dominic said.
Yeah, I wouldn't even, I'd be like, I'm out. I'm not winning.
It just depends who you're up against.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're up against, if you somehow, you know, let's say that you're Dominic and instead of having Wendell with you, you know, you have three absolute goats with you. Well, then it doesn't matter. Win that challenge and put two of them up. It doesn't matter at that point. So it's just going to be different in all situations.
That's true. That is true. Good point. David, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Yay. All right. So on to question 9, which also comes from John Johnston.
I love that name.
Yes. Well, you've met, I think you've met John.
I'm sure I have. I can't remember at this point.
Yes, you can't. John is very memorable. Everybody knows.
Okay, wait. I'll have to try to revisit this in my brain. You and I will discuss later. I'm sure I'll remember. John, so, I apologize.
Yeah. So John wants to know which U.S. survivor played in a way that was closest to the rules.
Well, he specified. Is winner? Just winner?
I'm sorry. Did I say play? Yeah, winner.
All right. So here's the situation, John. I've only been doing this for a little while now. So I haven't had an opportunity, as David has, to go through all of the seasons and actually look at each winner and determine whether or not they follow the rules. But what I can say is this. I have watched every season of Survivor. And my favorite winner of all time, and it might be for not the reason you're looking for, but it was JT. And it was JT because I picked him from the first episode. However, when JT won, I do think that JT played a phenomenal game because JT was so likable and he really did a great job playing the game. I know he had a very close, you know, he had a number two and that obviously helped him. But the guy was just, you couldn't help but like him. And he did great. So I really enjoyed JT as a winner. Whether or not he followed all the rules, I don't know. But he was a great winner. I think he did. I think he did wonderful as far as, you know, pretending to be nice because he didn't need to play and be, you know, pretend he is nice. But then I also really, another season that sticks out is Kim Spradlin. I mean, that she just wiped the floor with everybody in that season. And she did such a phenomenal job kind of controlling everybody, but in such a nice way. You know, I mean, everybody loved Kim. And I mean, I think in one of the challenges they had to, the question was, they had to answer questions about other people that they were playing with. And I think one of the questions was like, who would you trust most with your life or something crazy? And everybody said Kim. You know, so clearly she was doing a great job in building bonds and creating relationships with people. And so she's another one that sticks out as you, when you watch that season, you're like, she has to win because she's just doing such a phenomenal job putting it all together and forming these relationships. So those are the two that really stick out in my mind.
Those are two great picks. Although, I mean, I'm going to tell you, I don't remember the details on JT. I think the JT Steven duo.
Yes.
Played very well. But when we've seen JT in his returns.
I know.
Not so much. I think he needs a Steven.
Listen, and that, you know what? I'm glad you said that, because when I saw JT was coming back, I was like, oh, my God, I love JT. I was so excited. And then I was like, JT, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, I really think he needs a Steven.
He does. You know, he needs a Steven.
So I have, you know, like Kim obviously is a very good answer. Now, the easiest answer for me is Richard Hatch. And why? Well, because when I originally wrote these, they were based off of Richard Hatch's gameplay.
There you go.
So kind of by definition, you know,
yeah.
You know, it, but also Brian Heidick would be another one in a similar vein. And, you know, I even talked on the finale podcast about how the duo of Wendell and Dominic played a very Heidick-like game.
Mm-hmm.
I know that both of these are from a long time ago, and people are probably saying, oh, come on, pick somebody newer. But I just, you know, and I hate to sound like Steven, who Rob made fun of for refusing to rank people, but I have a hard time ranking the newer players in terms of who followed the rules the best. Because, you know, okay, for example, I can look and say, well, Wendell certainly did well in this regard.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, was he better or worse than Kim? Were they better or worse than Chris Doherty? Were they better or worse than Adam? I don't know. It's difficult to assign, like, percentages.
Right.
You know? I feel like when I have to do a job interview, we assign percentages. Well, the education percentage is worth 20%, and the experience is worth 30%. And then you ask them the questions, and depending on how much their answers match, I mean, is that what we have to do here to come to it? Am I making things too complicated? Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have a good answer other than, you know, Richard Hatch and Brian Heidick. And boy, obviously that goes way back.
But you know what? As far as Richard Hatch is concerned, you cannot not mention Richard Hatch. Because if
right.
I still say Borneo was my favorite season ever. It was phenomenal because it was so new. Nobody knew what to expect of it. And Jeff was in the water up to his neck being involved in like challenges. Do you remember that? Like that was amazing. Like he like got in the ocean and he was the one that was like moving boards that they had to stand on when they were out in the ocean. It was a whole different game and they were all kind of figuring it out. And I still remember like watching it and being fascinated when you realized that there was an alliance of four people and you were kind of like, wait, what? Like what just happened? And it was just this fascinating idea that he really created the game that we all now watch. He's
right.
The one that came up with this concept. And Jeff has said, we didn't know what was going to happen. We had no idea what was going to happen. And the first time they heard the word alliance said, their jaws just dropped open because they didn't expect that. And Richard is the one that came up with it. And so, yeah, I mean, that I think he probably is the best answer because clearly he set the tone and the rules as they are for everybody else that plays the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. So just don't go to him for tax advice.
Right. He should have paid his taxes. But damn, so. He certainly made for a great first winner. My
yes.
God.
Yes. All right. So. With the question number 10, Jessica.
All right. This is from Ryan Patterson. With the long form podcasts out, specifically from Dominic and Laurel, are there any revisions that need to be made about the statements made about the final three? We made a lot of statements.
We did. And I'm glad someone asked this question. Because if they hadn't, I'd have probably made up a name like, oh, Joe Smith wants to know. So I'm glad that a real person asked this question.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
But it's not because I'm going to answer yes, because I really don't think so. You know, what I heard in those interviews confirmed a lot of what I already believed to be the case. Now, you know, earlier you were talking about we can only go off of what we see. And that's true. But I think one thing that you and I pride ourselves in doing in this podcast and what I used to do before that is we take in all the information we can find.
Yes, we do.
And it takes a lot of hours, for anyone who's seen, you know, your pictures of notepads and everything.
Oh, my word. There's so many.
And that's how we come to our conclusions. And that's why, you know, it's going to sound like I'm patting, you know, ourselves on the back here. But that's why we get tweets from Survivor players saying, listen to this podcast. It really explains what happened to me.
Yes. And honestly, you know, that's why I became such a fan of you, because I didn't know that any of this world existed before I went out and played the game. I was a Survivor fan. I loved the show, but I wasn't listening to podcasts. And God, I wish I had before I played. But then when I listened to all of the podcasts regarding my season, and I listened to your podcast specifically with Rob, I would sit there going, my God, he is like, this is so right. This is exactly what happened. And it was great confirmation as a player to hear that. But it is because you weren't just looking at what was on the television and looking at it like it was in a vacuum. You were looking at everything surrounding it and the exit interviews and all of the information and putting it together. And I think that is certainly a necessary component when you're trying to determine what actually happened based on the edit that you're being provided.
Right. And so in this case, I mean, I, again, I'm not trying to, you know, pat ourselves on the back here, but I think that we had pretty much cracked the case here. You know, now part of that was when we did the finale podcast, we had already heard the Kellen deep dive. And, you know, so that helped us a lot. And then the other three confirmed quite a bit of, you know, what I'd been saying about Laurel's game and the fact that there was not really any place that she could have made a flip that would have given her a better chance to win. You know, one thing that I did note that actually reinforced my thoughts was how little relationship there was between Desiree and Laurel when Desiree presented the plan to take out Kellen. And, you know, I mean, we didn't know that in particular, but that lack of relationship and then her sudden attempt to flip made Laurel even less likely to go along with it. So that was something we didn't know, but it really just reinforced what we both had already said at that point. You know, and of course, very important, Laurel revealed in her deep dive interview with Rob that she had listened to as many Why Blank Lots podcasts as possible before heading out. So we know that she knew exactly what to do.
She talked about that too, that it's one thing to have a plan when you go out there, like how you think you're going to play the game. And it's a totally different one when you're actually playing it.
Right. And I think she was, you know, and that's something that I know that, some fans, some other podcasters jumped on her for was she went out there and in her pregame, she said, I'm going to take the lead. I'm going to be a leader. And we didn't see that in her game. And people were jumping on her for that. And it's like, well, she was never in a position where she could. She was a Malolo.
Yeah.
In the end, she was the solo Malolo.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, she was stuck in a crappy situation with no good way out. So, yeah, she might have had a plan to take control. But she gets out there and there's nobody to take control of. So, you know, she did the best to control her own destiny. But that was about it. And, you know, even then, you can only control your own destiny so far.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then it's up to the actions of the other players. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure some listeners were hoping I would say, oh, yes, I think this, you know, changed and the other thing changed. Those interviews to me, unless I missed something, and I know a couple people had raised at certain points when they listened to the interviews, they heard things differently than I did. And, you know, I was discussing that with them in the patron Facebook group, but at least from my recollection of what I heard on those podcasts, on those interviews, I think it just reinforced what I, you know, had already been saying. What about you?
I listened to them and I was thinking to myself the entire time, I need to apologize to these people. And I say that because they are all wonderful individuals. And this is more, I think, towards Dominic and Laurel, where Dominic was talking about, I would hear people refer to me as brash. And I was like, damn it, that was one of the things I said. You know? And it's interesting because listen, I know what they're all referring to because I've been through it. And it is extremely frustrating when other people are commenting on the game that you played and then you have to justify it. But I don't think that I was mean. I don't think you were mean. I think we were just looking at their games and putting it together. I think there are people out there that were exceptionally mean, especially to Laurel. And I do think Laurel was in a really... she's in a shitty spot. And we talked about that. You know, I mean, it was tough. And unfortunately, sometimes you are kind of the product of the environment you're placed in. And that was the environment that she was placed in. And unfortunately for her, it didn't work out. But she did with it what she thought would be best. And it made sense. But at the same time, I think we were all kind of hoping that she'd just be like, screw it. I'm going to throw caution to the wind and I'm going to do something crazy because otherwise I might not win this game. But she obviously considered those things and she thought about it when she was out there. And we heard about that extensively in her deep dive interview. And so I do think that a lot of what we heard really does reaffirm what we said. But I just was thinking, my God, I get it. And I want them to understand that. Like, I know what it's like to want to crawl under your couch because people are talking about you and saying, "What? You're so stupid. Why did you do what you did?" I experienced that. But you also have to kind of own it. And you just have to understand that you've put yourself out there. And it's frustrating. It's hard. But it was really interesting to listen to it. And from my perspective, like, I get it. Like, I'm with you. I can totally, totally understand the feelings that y'all went through. And if I ever offended you, I'm sorry. Like, I wasn't trying to. But it was a great season to talk about. We had a lot of fun. And I appreciate that we're able to do so. But as soon as I heard him say the word brash, I was like, man. Oh, that was a word I used a lot when I talked about him. So, and I know that Laurel was referencing, you know, listening to a lot of things people were saying about her and judging her game and talking about her game. And I'm sure she's listening to the podcast as well. So I get it. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think that it did reaffirm things that we had said, but I just wanted to apologize as well. I'm sorry.
Trying to reclaim your good cop role.
You know, I kind of have to. I don't think I was mean, but it's hard. It's definitely hard. And it's something that until you actually go through it, you really don't, you know, because it frustrates you. You want to like yell at the TV screen when they're showing you do something like, why aren't they explaining why I did that? You know, and then you're hoping David Bloomberg will. So, it's all on you, David. It's all on me.
It's all on you. I am the you know, the last best hope of people to, you know, who want their games explained.
So. Right. It's all up to David Bloomberg. You have so much pressure moving
forward.
That's
right. That's right. I'll try to live with it.
You know, so. I think you'll handle it just fine.
All right. So, well, there we have it for the season. You know, we will be back again in a few months to discuss the upcoming season that they half named after me.
Yes.
You know, and who knows, we mentioned earlier, it's even possible we'll pop up in your podcast subscription before then, especially if we do, in fact, catch up on International Survivors or maybe have something interesting to say about Big Brother, though. I have to tell you, I was looking at this group of Big Brother players and at least for most of them, maybe all of them, but at least for most of them, I don't think they would know strategy if it smacked them upside the head. So
listen,
yeah, it makes
you're
it a
so
lot
mean.
More difficult. I know, but it makes it a lot more difficult to do, you know, something like this, or at least, you know, it makes it more difficult to do it and ascribe any, you know, strategic motive when doing it. But, you know,
I don't know. I feel like they look like, honestly, like a regular group of people. I was pretty excited when I saw the lineup. I was thinking, well, this seems nice. Like, they're just like people you'd see in the grocery store. You know, like they seem like a regular group of people.
I don't know about that. But maybe you go to a different grocery store than
I do.
Oh,
my word. All right, so maybe
in any case,
I'll go with Walmart instead, okay? They're like people you run to in Walmart.
Okay. Yeah, you might be right about that one. So, in any case, whether we're here or not, you know, to make sure listeners get any potential summer podcast from us downloaded automatically, they need to subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts at robhasapodcast.com/survivor. Or, you know, you can go to your favorite podcatcher and do it. And we're also on the reality TV wrap-ups feed, which is going to be chock full of Big Brother coverage. So, you know, everyone should definitely make sure they're subscribed there. Also, as we wrap up, I want to remind everyone about the RHAP patron program. You can head over to robhasawebsite.com/patron to take a look at the various Patreon levels to find out what kind of perks you can get. You can join the patron Facebook groups. You know, I mentioned having a conversation there. And, you know, as a matter of fact, that's where the majority of these questions that we answered today originated. And there's even a special Big Brother patron group if you'd like to join that. That's for people who like to discuss everything about Big Brother, including the live feeds and everything else that's going on. Also, outside of the Facebook groups, you can, you know, just becoming a patron, you can find out in advance about live events, get first access, get discounts for tickets, etc. Rob also does special podcasts and videos just for patrons. And, you know, there's just a whole bunch of other perks, too. So, again, check out everything at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And of course, after you become a patron and get to the Facebook group, make sure to say hello to both of us there.
Yes, you need to. Absolutely, because it's much more fun that way.
So, now for the question of the hour, a hashtag.
Oh, you have geez. One. Really? Oh, I, yeah. You know, we didn't have to do predictions, so I was like, woohoo!
That is true, you know, unless you want to predict whether a David or Goliath wins, but...
That's true.
I have to predict that a David wins, I think. I think that's my only choice. But,
I think you do have to predict that.
Yeah. But in any case, yeah, do you have a hashtag?
A hashtag. Let's see. I'm going to go with... I don't know. Boy, I'm torn. David, you're right. We'll be missed. I have no idea. I really don't know.
All right. Well, you know what? I will just leave it up to listeners to make up their own hashtag because I don't have one either. So whatever it is, you know, just have fun, or you can just use the overall hashtag of YX lost.
You certainly can. And can I do a quick thank you before we go?
Sure.
Okay. So as I discussed previously, I was fundraising for Give Kids the World. And I did have some people that donated. In addition to, I did a Skype call with an individual. Steve, thank you so much for donating. We had a fabulous chat and that was great. He donated in order to have a Skype call with me. I also had a very fine gentleman. I think I mentioned him, Tony, who actually donated $520 to Give Kids the World. So I would post a picture of him on my Twitter. So that was pretty great. But also Emily, Steven, and Terry Porter, thank you so much for also donating towards the cause. You are all super fabulous in my world and I really, really appreciate it. The money is going to a great cause. So thank you for that. And I really appreciate the support. Just wanted to throw that out there. Thank you.
All right. Again, we've come to the end of the season here. Well, we're past the end of the season here. So, you know, besides talking to the two of us in the patron Facebook group, listeners can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89. And I'm at David Bloomberg. I did mention that I had been on a little bit of a Twitter vacation, but I'll be back.
Yeah, you better be.
That's right. So people should make sure to follow both of us to see the whole conversation throughout the week. And well, throughout the week, throughout the months, throughout the summer, I will certainly have things to say about Big Brother. I can guarantee that. So thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does all the editing on our Why Blank Lost podcast. And thanks, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. Finally, last and certainly not least, thanks to you, Jessica, for a spectacular season.
Aw, thank you, David Bloomberg. And also, you have been so spectacular as well. I appreciate your willingness to let me continue to do this. thank you for that. It is exceptionally fun, even though I do go through lots and lots of paper and it's a lot of time. But I love it. It's great. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, no notes. Hashtag no notes. It worked out okay, didn't it?
Okay.
Hashtag no notes.
No notes.
I love it.
There you
it.
Go.
Perfect.
All right. All right. So with that, everyone, we will certainly see you at the very least in a few months and maybe before then. Who knows? But until then, bye.
Bye-bye.
If you lost Survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You
played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh, baby, this is why blank lost.